Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It is Wednesday, the 26th of February, 13 minutes past 9 o'clock on this Wednesday morning. We welcome you. We thank you for being with us, as we always do. We welcome your input. panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org is the address. Please, when you send a letter, look and see if that is actually where you're sending it, because if you're not sending it there, we're not getting it. Or we're getting it later, and then we're just deleting it.
So panel, what is it one more time?
Yeah, panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. Okay. Keep them short. Keep them to the point. I'm sure we'll have a lot. I know we're going to try to do equal time here and talk about, obviously, the debate last night, and then also try to take on coronavirus and talk about that subject as well. So a lot to discuss today, and again, we welcome you. Let me introduce our panel to you and tell you what's going on here. We are pleased to have the Dean of the College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, and Cybersecurity at the University of Albany, at Albany, Robert Griffin. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. Thank you. Thank you for that introduction.
Very nice to have you here, as always. SUNY New Paltz Communications Professor and former New York State Senator Terry Gibson. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
And you know that our own Judith Enck will be down at New Paltz giving a speech. Which I remember exactly when it was.
I'll have to make
I
a
wrote
point
to you,
see
Joe,
that.
About that, but I did want to...
It's on campus on Tuesday, March 3rd, Alan.
Yeah. Huh. Well, thank you, Joe. We love New Paltz. I taught there for 40 years, and anytime we can give them a helping
hand...
It's
called Planet or Plastics, Moving Beyond Plastics, which is the keynote that Judith has been giving has been giving around. It's at 5 p.m. in the Lecture Center. Lecture Center 102. I'm sure you know it well.
It's right around the corner from my classroom.
I know it well.
Stop in and see Terry and look at where Alan, did you teach there?
Yes, and
in fact, one day I came out and made it, I was very prideful about never, ever, ever, ever going to a faculty meeting. So as I popped my head out of that room, the president of New Paltz at the time, Alice Chandler, came walking down the hall, grabbed me by the arm and said, "You're going." We're on the way. I got caught.
By the way, WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Well, I mentioned that, too.
And from deans everywhere, Alan, we appreciate the fact that you at least did one.
We have another SUNY Albany person, Rosemary Armeo, investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm hoping, Bob, that you've come more prepared than the head of Homeland Security was when he went to Congress the other day.
I do, too, because it'll be a very short segment if I'm not.
It was a tense meeting, was it? Was it not? Do you know what coronavirus is, sir? Well, I've heard of it. I'll have to check my notes and get back to you. It was disgraceful.
Yeah, it was not a great moment.
They said, what's the mortality rate? Well, it's around 2. And what is it for flu? Oh, about the same, which is completely not correct. It was appalling.
We'll get to that.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. That's all right. And I just want to get. I'd want to introduce Chris.
Oh, there's somebody else here.
Yeah, Times Union columnist Chris Churchill joins us as well. So I just want you, for those of you keeping score at home, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Chris Churchill, Terry Gibson, Bob Griffin, all here this morning.
And who's in charge this morning?
Yeah, I don't know.
No.
Good morning.
We have the moderators from CBS will be in charge.
Oh, If anything, I feel that Rosemary and I predicted it last night that it would be awful, and it was. I had little or no hope that they would do a good job, and they didn't. And so it was Nora O'Donnell and Gail King. And then there was also, then they brought in a couple of other candidates or a couple of other moderators. Poor Bill Whitaker came in and asked a question. He was great, and then they shuffled him off and... It was a mess. The whole thing was really a mess last night.
No.
But it was a lot of screaming, a lot of yelling, and it was hectic. It was messy. These are all words that the press is using to describe it. It certainly seemed to be a debate where many of those candidates will probably not be on the next debate stage, and they were throwing everything they could against the wall and trying to see what would stick. And so it was hard to follow, but because the debate really didn't have a structure, mm-hmm. and you would ask one candidate a question about Ukraine, you would ask another question, the next question would be about the climate, and then you would ask about presidential pardons, it just didn't have any, it had no continuity.
No,
so it was really hard to figure out. And
one other adjective, Joe, and that is suicidal. the debate was suicidal for the Democrats. It really made them look like, it made them look terrible.
It looked bad. And to that point, Alan, it seems like, and I'll just ask the whole group here, I mean, whenever you come out of a debate, the obvious question is, who came out looking good? Did anyone in that debate, other than, in my mind, the only adult in the room who seemed to come out fairly well was Joe Biden.
I agree with you.
He had his best debate, I think, ever. He finally figured out how to joke about himself. He made, I counted him, 2 jokes about himself, his lack of
hair.
And his how he was the only one who shut up on time. Why was he doing that?
Yeah.
Didn't he also introduce himself as the candidate for Senate?
Yeah.
That was kind of it. So he's one I'm saying did great, and it still was not really great.
He also said 150 million Americans have died from gun violence.
He's never been good with numbers.
Although Bloomberg wasn't very good with numbers and facts either, I found, because he kept stumbling over trying to recall, obviously, what he had learned.
Well, he's a terrible debater. He's never been very. I mean, he really is. But you know,
so is Biden.
And Biden's
part.
Not great either. Yeah. But I don't know if you caught it last night. There was one slip up that Bloomberg made, and he caught himself, and they cut it.
About
he said
buying.
He bought. He said I bought.
I bought.
He was talking
house.
About those candidates.
I bought
that he
the house.
I bought you
and
the Congress. You like
he,
so much.
He talked
much,
about I helped get them elected, and he said I bought, and then they for some reason they cut him off, or he went to another question, but he stopped himself. But that was my mouth just like dropped when he said that.
That was just like.
But you know what? Why not just go ahead and say that? Because that's what he was saying. He said he basically said I bought like 20 something house seats. That's basically what he was trying to say.
Yeah.
Well, and he basically
he really
did.
Feels, I think. It is the way he feels about it.
Well, he actually did.
No, he did. I mean, it's the truth. We might as well just be straightforward about it.
I mean, the candidates who ran in those races might disagree a little bit.
Well,
I mean,
of course they
have
would,
to be the people on the ballot.
But, I'm sure
but I do think Biden comes out better out of this one than
he saved himself, I think. I think he'll win South Carolina now. I don't know if he'll
not by enough.
But that'll carry through to
well,
much else. But
if you look at the national polls, all of them, the amalgam of polls, Bernie's got it. He's got California. He's got all these other places. I don't see how they're going to stop him.
And I don't think anything happened last night that's really going to.
I was going to say that.
Be a blow to that. I think he took a lot of fire. The crowd was strangely pro-Bloomberg, which you kind of have to wonder about a little bit. Well, it was a $3,000 ticket, apparently. So, and he's not even on the ballot there. So a little strange to have a very big pro-Bloomberg crowd. But, I don't think there was anything. I think Bernie took a lot of fire and mostly handled it pretty well. I mean, he got a little shouty at times, as he tends to do.
He has his answers, and he gave them. And
well, on the
more disciplined of them. He always, he stays on message for the most part.
Well, on the Cuban thing, he's got a problem.
You think so?
I do think so. Look, I am all for letting everybody go to Cuba, and I'm all for opening things up and the rest of it. I think it's great. Nevertheless, Castro was a tyrant. He was, and that's a tough thing for.
Bernie made a good excuse that he never defended Castro, the authoritarian leader.
Yeah.
It was good policies that the U.S. should copy, like universal health.
Right.
I gotta say, I think that's a bunch of baloney. I mean,
which part?
That's an issue for. I mean, it may be for
not
some
for
voters.
Young people.
It may be for some voters, but I mean, we have a president who praises tyrants all
every
over
day.
The world.
Good point.
So I mean, that won't be an issue for Bernie in the general election, and. I mean, minutes after or seconds after Bernie talked about Fidel Castro, Bloomberg was lavishing praise on the Chinese regime, which, by the way, has 1 million people in concentration camps. You can't have it both ways. If you're going to say you can't praise a dictator on any level, then you can't turn around and praise China, where, by the way, Bloomberg has considerable business interests and has yet to release his taxes detailing what those interests might be.
Yeah, Chris, and I appreciate most of what you said. Where I do have a disagreement, though, is I do think it's going to cost Sanders, particularly in the Southern Florida vote, which is enormously important for a Democrat to be able to take Florida. And taking Florida is going to be incredibly important for the Democrats if they think that they're going to have a shot at winning the presidency.
I don't think the Dems have any hope of Florida this year.
Yeah,
so that's a minor
concern.
That
one might be out of the bag.
But if we're going to talk about, pardon me?
Why not?
It's going to go Republican. it's so pro-Trump, I think.
Well, one of the things that strikes me right now is the similarities between where Bernie is now and where Trump was in 2016. Mm-hmm. If you looked at the Republican debate in 2016, you saw also Trump really acting sort of in a Teflon way. He was able to repel all of these things. Nothing really stuck to him, and nothing's really sticking to Bernie either, I think. I think he came out of that pretty much unscratched.
Yep.
And they both obviously are taking extreme positions, you know, relatively speaking, to their own parties. And I just think there's a lot of similarities replaying itself for the Democratic Party this year.
Well, it's also just they're all – I mean, they went after – this was the first debate where they really went after him. But it didn't last very long. It was like the first 5 or 10 minutes, and then they kind of forgot about him, it seemed like.
And they remembered Bloomberg.
And Bloomberg took some big hits. And I mean, Elizabeth Warren once again just carved him up. I mean, she is the
– I don't know how fair that was, though.
It wasn't. And they afterwards they questioned her, like, how do you know that he actually said kill the baby?
Yeah, that was terrible.
I mean, a woman made the accusation.
It's in a lawsuit, and she goes, I believe the woman. And he goes, yeah, but why would you not? But why are you paying? She goes, well, who are you going to pick? You're going to believe the man. I believe the woman.
No, but
it's
that story
not,
was confirmed by a second employee. I mean, the Washington Post reported that has a second employee on the record saying he heard him say it. So,
well, he certainly can't tell jokes well, that's for sure. He fell right on his face on the Naked Cowboy reference.
Oh, he's a terrible joke teller.
Yeah, you
he
can
always thinks he's funny.
Yeah, that was Colbert's comment.
When you're a billionaire, everybody laughs like crazy whenever you say anything.
There was another moment, too, when Elizabeth Warren...
I'll laugh if you brought the checkbook.
I was surprised at some of the things that Elizabeth Warren brought up. She had limited time, and she chose to pick a fight over the filibuster. And I thought, of all the things to talk about at this crucial moment, that is not going to be something that really rallies the crowd around you. It's important.
It's a very Senate,
but it's a
very
geeky Senate. Yeah, it's a very geeky.
It's so far inside baseball that people aren't even going to appreciate what she's saying.
I thought she really wasted her time on that one. I thought it was
so.
I think she was good, though. I think she's always really good at these things.
I brought up Chris and I were talking about this earlier. I was struck by how anemic her attacks on Bernie were, and common sense seemed to be that should have been the person that she went. If she did that whole thing about I'd be more effective,
yeah.
But then she backed off, and it was much more passionate against Bloomberg. So while the pundits say no, could there be a Bernie Warren ticket in the
works?
Yes, I think there might be.
Oh God, no!
Well, you've been saying that.
I've been saying that from the beginning, even though they're next door states. Bernie is known for never ever deviating from his central message and his beliefs. And the person who would be most likely to do that would be Warren.
I mean, I think we do tend to get a little cynical and horse racy about these things where we are always figuring, we're thinking, oh, she should knife Bernie because he's in her way. But, you know, they do have ideas and ideologies that guide them. And I think Bloomberg does offend her. And I think she does agree with Bernie on most of his platform.
But she's in an existential race against Bernie, and she is devoted many years and
against
how many
Bernie.
Millions into this race now? So logically, that should have been her focus.
And there's two people we haven't talked about that I think deserve props, and that was Buttigieg and Klobuchar. I thought Klobuchar had the quote of the evening when she said, you know, if we're going to spend the next 4 months ripping each other apart, then we're going to watch the next 4 years watching Trump rip the country apart. I thought they were, for both of them, I thought they were very reasoned in their responses, but it got drowned out. I thought Pete was particularly effective last night, and it just got lost in the hand-waving and yelling.
I disagree.
I do, too.
He got it. Well, I thought he did.
My hands in the air.
He had a good line shortly after.
Yeah,
shortly,
the nostalgia of Trump.
Well, yes, but shortly after Warren going after Bloomberg on the babies, he made a comment, which was, as Donald Trump can get away with that kind of thing, we as Democrats can't. And I thought, well, yeah.
Well, but the other point
that's a good point.
That's true,
but couldn't hear it. You couldn't hear it, and it got because there was screaming.
But you know, Sanders has put plans out that we couldn't possibly afford. I mean, it's like promising everybody a unicorn, everybody getting excited that they're going to get a unicorn. They're not
chicken in every pot.
Yeah,
but he's done that. He's done that.
He's offering not just the chicken; it's the pot and the stove that he's that he's offering as well. And he can't answer the basic questions about you know how much it's going to cost and how he's going to pay for it.
But he's never been able to answer those questions. Right. He wasn't able to answer them in 2016.
I think every voter has to know that he's not going to be able to accomplish all those things. Nobody ever expects that a presidential candidate will accomplish, but at least he's giving people something. Mm-hmm. You know what he wants.
Yep.
And with Klobuchar and Pete, I don't I can't really tell you exactly what they're offering, except just this kind of vague moderation that's not Trump.
And a naked ambition, too. I mean, you know, I watched Mayor Pete last night, and I don't agree with you, Bob. I honestly think he was kind of mean-spirited.
So last night was the first time his act was wearing a little thin for me.
I agree.
He seems so rehearsed. He's at his limits now.
There were times when he was talking over everybody else, and it just
that one thing was
he does have that unflappable calm thing, though, which in this field, on both sides, Trump and the Dems, it's really nice to just have someone who is not flappable.
What was convenient was that I think we can all agree that why was Tom Steyer on that stage?
I couldn't agree more.
Well, he's polling at 20% in South Carolina.
Only in South Carolina.
I know, but that's the weird thing. Like, he's this weird factor in that one state that, I mean.
I saw 17% myself, but
He's dumped a ton of money.
I know that. I know that.
He's what?
But, I mean, it would be, yeah.
He's what? I'm sorry.
He's dumped a ton of money into South Carolina.
Yeah.
Right. One good thing about the debate, chaotic as it was that the negatives about Bernie were all out, from no medical records to the Cuba, which I think is a kerfluffle over nothing, to Putin is supporting you because he knows you're the most likely to lose to Trump. All of the issues that we've heard, you're going to hurt the downside of the ticket. All of that came out. I don't think it hurt him, as we've discussed, but I also don't think he responded convincingly about any of those points. The same doubts I had going in, I have coming out.
I don't think he has to respond any better than he did, because he's learned from his past campaign experience that some of these things just don't need to be answered. His support continues to be there, just like Trump learned that he doesn't have to respond to these things. I mean, to me, Bernie stands strong because he has decided to be who he is and to be transparent about it. And whether you like it or don't like it, it's very difficult to attack him because he's put it all on the table.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I just handed Alan a whole bunch of letters. We'll get to those right after this. Stop. The on-air lights are on. Let's just roll back the last 3 minutes and just say what you were all saying during the break.
Good panel.
Yeah, we can all get a cup of
continuing coffee. Exactly. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. We'll get to your letters in just a second. Just a reminder, we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Rosemary Armeo, Chris Churchill, Bob Griffin, Terry Gibson, and Alan Chartok with the letters. Go, Alan.
Well, thank you, Joe. Barbara says, vote. I'm surprising myself. I made my decision on voting for Biden. Until now, I was fluctuating between Warren and Klobuchar. We don't need Sanders to destroy our chances. I hope the winning ticket is Biden and Klobuchar. We are a moderate country at best, and that's Barbara from Long Meadow.
Hmm. Thank you, Barbara. I think that's a great letter.
It is. Tom says, Trump's billions. Dear panel, Trump wants billions in big black letters, billions of dollars to fight the coronavirus with no clue on how to use it, but all the same siphons off billions from our military budget for his wall. Oh, really? Mm-hmm. I mean, we're taking one from the other. I'm not so sure. Do Americans see the duplicitous absurdity in all of that? And that's Tom from Wappingers Falls.
So we're going to talk about coronavirus in a little bit, so we should come back to that, come back to the question about the billions. And actually whether it's enough for the federal government to set aside if this thing goes the way it looks like it could go.
Well, the CDC and others, Bob, are saying it's coming.
Yep.
And that, you know, and we've been having meetings here already on what this radio station is going to do.
Yeah.
If this happens, how are we going to get the people? How are we going to get the coverage?
Interesting to look at what Canada is doing in contrast to the U.S.
Well, go ahead.
Well, they deployed. We're going to talk about it. Am I interrupt?
No, go ahead.
Okay.
Let's do some letters, then we'll go to coronavirus.
It's always so free-flowing around here. It's good. Frank says, Sanders. Sanders supporters fancy he'll energize many new voters. Maybe so. But such polarizing extremist candidates energize even greater numbers to come out to vote against them. You say you want a revolution? 4 more years of Trump will be a revolution, irretrievably transforming America. What we need instead is to return to decency, honesty, sobriety, sanity, a return to the evolutionary in capital as evolutionary progress that made life so much better for so many. And that's from Frank. And then we heard from Jim. It's reality check time. Dear panel, the number one priority of Americans is and has always been the economy. Given the current choices, to me, the best person to beat Trump on the economy is Bloomberg. Given the ridiculous shouting match last night and the difficulty Americans are having making our choice, I believe it's time for the panel to show some leadership.
We'll pick the president.
I want everybody to line up.
Oh, man. I don't think we could agree. We would have been line up for days.
We didn't say we're going to be leaders. We're just going to just bitch about everything. We're going to be leadership.
To show some leadership and come to a conscientious consensus, I think that's the word is, on who they can agree has the best chance to beat Trump. Jim from Wappingers.
Well, we've been. If he's going to say it's Bloomberg, I'm just not going to get on that bus. There's just no way. I think Bloomberg has the best chance of winning.
But okay, let's assume. Yeah. Just so you say that, I know how you feel. Yeah. But let's assume that it is Bloomberg versus Trump. What are you going to do in the voting booth?
I might start looking at Lincoln Chafee.
You don't believe that.
I really don't mean that.
I mean, I would have a very, very, very difficult time voting for Bloomberg. I mean, part of it is just the way that he's trying to buy the election, but also just his record. I just find it really troubling.
Okay. And then we heard from Alan, a different Alan, saying coronavirus. Does anyone think with the millions of Americans not insured and underinsured, isn't America particularly in trouble? There are already cases of people who have gotten stuck with huge bills from doing the right thing for everybody by going to the emergency room. How many Americans will go to a drugstore instead, infecting others? We need Medicare for all. How will America survive this coming pandemic? And that's from Alan. And yes, that's a very good point, because if what's going on in China happens in this country, there's real trouble coming.
You know, I know we're kind of waiting on the coronavirus, but it does kind of highlight a lot of the problems that we have with our healthcare system, where people aren't going to get medical attention because they don't have insurance or because they can't afford it, or people who don't have sick time. So they show up at work, they show up at whatever fast food restaurant you eat at, sick as a dog, and then, you know, this thing spreads. Like, we're just, and I know you're the Homeland Security guy, but it just seems like as a country we're particularly vulnerable in some respects to something like this.
This shows how U.S.-centric we are, too. Did you see the guy from Iran, the health minister, making it? Yes. He's coughing and sweating,
right,
sick.
Yes.
So he's spreading the germ as he's talking about
but
it.
But there's nothing to see here.
Nothing
we've
to
got
see
it under
here.
Control.
And Africa is a place to watch. Mm-hmm. If this spreads to Africa, it will explode there, because you talk about having uninsured people here. They don't have facilities. They don't have the means to get to rural areas. If it gets to Africa, it's Ebola and AIDS all over again.
And Bob,
were
you saying emergency preparedness, Bob?
Yeah, I mean, I think a pandemic will lay bare a lot of failures of the government, and it's not just the level of medical care and the access to medical care. It's gonna lay bare the lack of planning and preparation that goes into thinking about a pandemic. It's going to be this is in my mind a pandemic with a high lethality is sort of the worst case scenario for me, even worse than the terrorism. It was something we struggled with
so
at DHS.
What brings us to give us a timeline of what how and when we could get to a pandemic level. In the sense of...
Give us a timeline for when we're all going to get it.
No.
Will we be here next week?
I just want to see if I have to cancel.
But
no.
Bob, isn't there a definition of pandemic? It has
that's what I'm looking
for. Continents. Is that right? Do I have that right?
There is a WHO definition of pandemic, and I don't think we're that far away from it. My concern about what's happening is that when you start to see the medical personnel who actually are caring for us and are taking all of the appropriate protections are also becoming victims of the disease, that's a double whammy, because you both don't have the capacity to deal with other people and you have additional sick. I really worry. I look at this and understand I'm very pessimistic. That's why I was pretty good at being with Homeland Security.
I could see this spreading. I read today about the spread into Germany. I read another small article about the UK has already started to do random testing. It will get into our populations. I just don't see how you can stop it. And then we're looking at having to make some really hard decisions about government stepping in and doing things that the American people really don't like. I don't think we have the ability to do what China did with a lot of their policies that were aimed to stop the spread of this disease. So I worry. You know what I really worry about, Alan? I worry about the disease really starting to the virus really starting to spread, hitting us in end of March, beginning of April.
Yeah.
Really getting worse, and then we're into the season. You know things like commencement, things like sporting
where
events.
People gather,
you think
mean.
All of the wow. You know, think of all of the events that occur even in the capital region here, where we love to come together, whether it's the Tulip Festival mm-hmm. or things like that. And this is the plan that we're going to have to talk about.
And how are the Japanese feeling about 2020 Olympics?
Yeah, they may have to move them, right?
Well, here's what I worry about.
Well, yeah.
They did?
No, she said move them.
Not just move, you're right. Yeah. They were going to just call them off.
They could.
Yeah.
So here's what I worry about. One of the things that I teach is crisis management. And anybody who's into that, just like Bob is, I'm sure, understands that one of the keys to managing a crisis is to work very, very hard in your day-to-day efforts to develop strong relationships with your allies, to develop mm-hmm. strong relationships with the media, to develop strong relationships with any support departments that report mm-hmm. to you. And Trump has done exactly the opposite of all that. He has burned bridges every time there's been a chance to build a bridge. So he has created a little island for himself that he now stands on basically alone, unsupported, unrespected. People are not encouraged and enthusiastic about reporting to him. He has shunned his allies, and he is completely unprepared, which means our country is completely unprepared to manage a significant crisis like this wow. virus or like the economic damage that is about to happen. And all of this is happening while we're entering into an election.
Yeah. Can I, on that point, a question, and I do not mean to say that I'm equating one with the other. Death and illness is horrible. But if there's an effect on the economy, and this is coming to the U.S. end of March and April, that's when the economic effects will be felt. And supposedly that's when it has to look really good or Trump will take a hit in the election.
Well, what about now?
Is that a silver cloud in the coronavirus
I
story?
I hate to think that's what it's
I know. I don't
to,
mean but, to equate it, but that's my question.
But it would
question.
Be the general election time where it would really matter.
But that's my
Which
problem
is
that right now, you know, I read articles last night about Trump being concerned about the stock market. And Larry
right.
Ludlow was out talking yes. about the effect on the economy. And it's missing. We're missing what the point is. The point is, how do we protect the safety and health and well-being of our residents? Even
that's
worse, if you look
about.
At what's happened in the federal government since this administration has come in, is that they've pretty much gutted the response to pandemics. So at the Department of Homeland Security, they actually got rid of the Office of Health Affairs that was supposed to be the lead agent, the lead element of DHS in this
You'll
element.
Pay for that.
We are definitely going to pay for this. They've wiped out the White House's response tree as far as pandemics are concerned, and they frankly underfunded the CDC. And these are all chickens that are going to that are coming home to roost.
And Trump supporters are about to find out just how little respect he really does have for his fellow human beings. I mean, this is a president who really, at the end of the day, just doesn't give a damn about his fellow citizens. He really doesn't. And we're about to see that. We're about to see that when we get into a mode where the only thing he really has at his disposal is the military. Think about what he can do with the military if we get into a situation
wow.
where we have this virus spreading at a rapid rate and he has no other structure to depend on other than the military. To me, it's terrifying. And I think that we have a very big reason to be very concerned. And we should be reaching out to our elected officials to try to encourage them to do whatever they can to put pressure on this administration to take action.
You know, there's a terrific book called The Great Influenza by John Barry.
Yeah.
And if you haven't read it, it's really – It's about the 1918 outbreak of the Spanish flu, and it's an incredible book because he takes at the end and says, you know, if this had happened now, we would have been looking at 100 million deaths from the Spanish influenza. But it also shows how difficult it is to deal with a pandemic and you know, deal with that, the issue of the potential breakdown of some sort of key societal issues. And that's where I thought the CDC was spot on yesterday by saying, hey, listen, you know, start to make plans. I'm not looking to panic people. I'm not trying to get a run on the markets, but start to have plans, understand how you could start to provide services in different ways, which is exactly what they should be doing. And then in the afternoon, after apparently the White House got angry, they sort of soft-shoed it. And I go back to the initial comments and say that's what we have to pay attention to.
This is what's going to happen. He is going to shut down the messaging from the CDC. He is going to shut down their website. He's going to take control of the messaging from that department because they're going to contradict him, rightly so. And we've seen all along this administration, anytime you contradict the president, they shut you down.
Yep.
And that's what he's going to do.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC. And that didn't fire you up. What will? Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We've been talking about a lot of things, talking about the debate, talking about, as they say in the States, talking about a coronavirus. The president at one point early on in this said that it'll flame out by the end of the spring and it'll go away.
When
he's a stable
warm.
Genius.
The great scientist, I think Sanders called him last night or something.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So how do you... I mean, how do you fight that in the sense of that if that is the message that's being put out?
So the one of the bright spots in sort of this dark and gloomy cloud. Well, I think everything that was said about Trump and what he will probably do with the CDC and the messaging, the states actually have very, very robust health systems. Uh-huh. And particularly in New York, I think we're really blessed with a very, very competent and great leadership in the public health area. So there are ways that we can counter, you know, we can counter some of the silliness that I expect from the federal government. For the people at home, listening to it, a lot of it's basic hygiene. You know, wash your hands. You know, understand that if you are not feeling well, as much as possible, try not to go to work. And I say as much as possible because there's sort of this myth about use of sick leave, and you become darned if you do and darned if you don't. In the sense of if you don't show up to work, then people start questioning. If you show up to work sick, then people get angry. So I mean, it's part of the culture that I think we're going to have to change.
So if you're flying to Washington State or to California, which are the entry zones for the virus so far, would you wear a mask?
I wouldn't. But I also think that's I think some of the faulty thinking. And what my concern is with the spread in Europe, and the way, if you think of the points of entry into the United States from Europe, it's not just going to be a West Coast issue. I do fret over this virus getting into into populations, like if you think about the homeless population in L.A.
Yeah.
If you think about the vulnerable populations that we have in San Diego and San Francisco, but also in Arizona, these are places where this virus could have an enormous, enormous impact and continue to spread.
The president is expected to speak on this at 6 o'clock tonight, and he is going to meet with health officials this afternoon. I don't know what you could say, but
he doesn't listen. This is the problem, is he doesn't listen. He doesn't respect authority. He doesn't respect science. And so he may speak, but he's going to put his own original spin on it, which is going to be full of lies.
What's he
going to say? Full of misleading statements. And it's going to leave people feeling probably more insecure than they were before he spoke.
Well, that's what I'm curious about, Alan's point. I mean, what does he say? I don't know what you say. I mean, I know Larry Kudlow is on saying we have this contained.
We have this contained, yes.
I don't know how he could say that. He may have better information than the rest of us, but again, just reading the news today, and I'm talking about upticks, you know, by the minute, you know, reports coming in from Austria, from Italy, from Germany. Any soccer fans out there?
And we don't even know how many people have got it.
Absolutely, Alan. But, you know, Juventus and Inter Milan, which is a huge game, is going to be played in an empty stadium. The Catholic
really?
Church, yeah, the Catholic Church in wow. in Milan has canceled services. And this is a week before Ash Wednesday. I mean, this is the type of proactive work government is going to have to take.
The EU
has taken very strong and directed measures again, unlike the United States. Canada has as well.
Yeah.
So,
if my mother's listening, I'm sorry.
Bad Catholic. Lapse.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for getting called out on the radio for that one.
Sorry.
To Bob's point.
Want my rosary?
So whatever you're giving up for Lent, you have to start a week earlier than you expected.
I was giving up services, but apparently that's not going to work.
To Bob's point, I just want to say that our healthcare system is already teetering in a very fragile place without anything else happening. So we only need two or three people to find a way to get into this country with this virus to be in situations where they don't have access to real healthcare to begin to create a situation where we're just not able to deal with it. I mean, it's not like we have this great healthcare system that's all prepared and well-funded and well-organized. And I mean, we just don't have that. It's unfortunate.
So
but,
does a pandemic increase the odds of people supporting Medicare for All in the primary
well, I think,
and bring
you know,
things
it's,
full circle?
You know, honestly, I think it could change how people think about healthcare. I really do. And again, we haven't faced a pandemic again since the early 1900s, where I think you're right, Terry, and there are a lot of bad policies that now sort of come home to roost in this situation, like the fear that we've created in the immigration and the immigrant population about even going to hospitals, which is going to lead to the potential spread, or the fact that people are, the economy is booming, but that's because people are working multiple jobs and frankly they're living paycheck to paycheck and can't afford to stay home. All of these elements become the elements of a perfect storm that if this thing hits, it's going to hit hard.
Wow.
There was a Supreme Court case yesterday where they basically have ruled that it's okay for border guards to shoot people trying to cross the border. Did you read that? Did you hear that?
Horrifying. 5-4 decision.
So just think about how that might factor into this whole thing if we reach a point where we need to secure the borders in a way that we're not already doing it.
I want to quote the Chief Justice who said there are no Republican or Democratic justices, except that you can always predict how everybody's going to vote based on who appointed them in political leanings. It's awful.
Let's do a couple of letters, and then we'll bring us up to the top of the hour.
Anything you say. Justin says, debate. Bernie said nothing other than what our former President Obama has said. Will the panel condemn him, too?
Bernie talking points. Gotta love him.
Well, that is true. I mean, that goes back to the point that I made earlier, that people praise dictators all the time, but for some reason Fidel Castro is a particular lightning rod. And I know that it has to do with politics more than anything, but, there are a lot of Chinese people in California who fled the Chinese regime, and they deserve as much respect as the Cuban Americans in South Florida. So,
I wasn't supporting China anymore than I was supporting
No, I understand
Castro.
That. But it's just,
and my point is that
you
said it originally and interestingly, whereas he used the same point that Bernie did, and it's become the turning, and it's the Bernie bros, the supporters heard him.
I want to hear the end of the letter.
Sorry, I'll shut up.
No, that's okay.
Bernie explicitly condemned all authoritarian regimes. What more can he do to please public sentiment? The tickets to last night's debate cost anywhere from $1,500 to $3,000, also known as the Wind Cave, the Wine Cave Debate.
The Wine Cave
I've heard
Debate.
People call it that. The other dictatorship we always love to praise is Saudi Arabia, which has just been like hugged and adored by every president since, I don't know, Reagan maybe? We have this kind of weird, kind of hypocritical view of which dictators we can support and praise and which ones we can't.
But it's gotten worse under Trump. In other words,
for sure. Yeah. And that's why I think it's less of an issue for Bernie than it might have been 8 years ago or 4 years ago.
Anyway, South Carolina debate, says Jay from Burlington. Why were people applauding Bloomberg and Pete and booing every negative mention of billionaires at the debate last night? Maybe it's because the venue was full of donors and VIPs who spent $1,750 to $3,020 per seat.
I mean, it's a good point. No matter who you're supporting, I would. It is kind of unfair when the crowd is not impartial, or at least making a lot of noise. It does impact your viewership of the debate.
That used to be. Do you remember the old days when they had
the
debates?
Yeah, they used to quiet them.
I mean, they would shoot them if they said anything. You know,
last night they were the moderators had just completely lost control.
Candidates,
they weren't going to be able to control the crowd.
What I want to know from Chris Churchill, who has always been a moderate, interesting person, but who never says enough.
Yeah, Chris.
Then all of a sudden, I want to know something, Chris.
What I don't say enough.
What did you eat for breakfast this morning?
I do have this big cup of coffee here.
It's a lucky shirt he has on, Alan.
It's a lucky shirt.
You want me to say more, I'll be happy to say more. I'm just trying to let him.
You're saying a lot. That was the whole point of my interjection here. Clay says, panel, the debate was great. What would you have the contestants be? And I love the word contestants.
Contestants. Come on down.
These people really want to be president. Let them shout it out. Not unlike some of the roundtable exchange, enthusiasm now translates into votes later. Wait a second. I want to go back to that to the hit. Not unlike some of the roundtable exchanges. Anybody get that one?
Yeah, let me interrupt you.
Yeah, we all into it.
I mean, we're all talking. And jump like
all,
this.
Yeah, we're just talking each other. But first of all, none of us in this room is running for president that I know of.
Wait, yet. I am.
Although I'm thinking about it.
Fairly, I think we all get a lot more of our ideas and points across than they did last night.
Well, we also all like each other.
At least I like them.
I don't know about the other one.
No, I think we do. But I think that's a good point too. I mean, there's a current there of trust and people who are uneasy with each other, and because Bernie Sanders does not like Pete Buttigieg, that seems very clear.
Neither does Amy Klobuchar.
But you know, at a different level, though, I think it's so important for the voters to be able to hear the fundamental difference between the progressives' ideas versus the moderates' ideas, and that the fact that we can't even have a venue where we can actually listen to the ideas without, I mean, the word contestant really jumped out at me, without this appearing like it's a reality.
But what
show,
if Trump becomes? Bob, what if Trump becomes a winner again because of this chaos? I mean, you know,
I think it's horrible. And
I'm not sure that's the way it ever plays out. I mean, Trump went through a very nasty primary with all sorts of embarrassing debates. And, you know, 2008 between Obama and Clinton was really, really nasty, and Obama went on to win. So I don't know.
Well, the form of the debate, as we've all talked about, was just
Ray
horrible.
Wants to do the news.
It wasn't fair to the candidates, and it wasn't fair to the American people, and it certainly wasn't fair to the Democratic Party for that format to be done in such a way that it really forced them.
Ray has abandoned us. We can't let him do the news.
The only thing I can say is that, you know, I give credit to CNN because they've been doing these town hall debates, and every night they'll have all the candidates. Mm-hmm. They have one candidate, give them an hour and talk about, and that's where you really get a sense of who these people are and what they've been talking about. But I don't know if anybody watches them. That's the problem. So we'll take that. We'll pause. We'll come back. We have lots of letters. Ray, ready to do the news.
I've been ready for quite a while.
What are you going to feed the meter?
And you never want to be on the wrong side of Ray, that's for sure.
We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Chris Churchill, Terry Gibson, Bob Griffin. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan, we'll continue with the letters.
Okay, we got a ton of letters. So here comes Paul. Debate. I am sorry that debating in mass seems to be what the DNC thinks is the way to present the best their candidates to us. Why not a one-on-one sit-down for each of the candidates with a probing interviewer taking the place of a stage full of antagonists? And that's from Paul. Well, I certainly agree with Paul's central point.
To CNN's credit, they have been doing these town halls that nobody watches, and most of the candidates have sat down for long interviews. You can find them if you search for them.
Yeah.
And also, some of the debates have been better organized than this. Some of the debates have actually given candidates fair time to address equal issues.
And John says Bernie should define John, Albany resident, writing from Florida. Bernie should define socialism as we all benefit from it. Medicare, Social Security, police, fire departments, etc. From the radical difference between it and communism, do not let the narrative make them the same. And that's from John. And in fact, Mario Cuomo used to say that to me all the time. You go to the library, you go to public schools, you know, you have a sense of what socialism can be.
I think his line about socialism for the rich and rugged individualism for the poor is a pretty good one, which is a Martin Luther King line that he used in one of the debates, but I think it's pretty accurate in a lot of ways.
Juan writes, South Carolina debate. What a fortuitous circumstance for Bloomberg to have such a fervently supportive audience, boos at his opponents and laughs at his awful jokes. Thank you, says Juan. I think Juan means that.
The week before, in the debate the week before, Bloomberg was soundly booed. So the problem is not, the problem is with the moderation. That should just not be allowed.
So the question is that the best audience that money can buy?
I also don't know why they can't just turn off the mics.
Good point.
I mean, it's just turn them off.
They like the stuff.
No, I know. But there was nobody was looking good.
There was somebody in the crowd last night who was repeatedly yelling.
Yes.
And it seemed like it was the same guy over and over and over again.
He did it once during Klobuchar. He did it once during Bloomberg.
Why wasn't that guy escorted out after the first?
Joe would have done it.
I don't know.
And Joe
and you could see that it was distracting them. A lot of them were kind of losing their attention and looking over at him.
Well, yeah, and it was really weird. And I'm sorry, and I know this is petty. And when I say I know it's petty, I know that the only person who's going to enjoy this is Rosemary. But but the beginning of that debate with Norah O'Donnell and her white, just wearing the white suit, and like, welcome to the debate, and just the handout to...
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, it was like,
awful.
Come on, bring on the
come
Rockettes.
On
it was like Hunger Games.
It was.
No,
it was.
Telling my wife, I said, they should just give them like shields and swords and send them out there because that's what
it was.
Contest.
I mean, it was like a Vegas show. Well, okay.
I also hate the questions at the end. They're really personal. Like, tell us something about yourself that would surprise us.
You know? You're right.
It's like, I just try too hard, you know. I care too much about this country.
Well, yeah, and it was very. I thought. Like that set the tone, didn't it? And then it didn't get any better.
No.
That. All right, more.
Okay, more. And I do apologize for
that's
Joe.
All right. That's fine. I was just.
It was a doctor's office confirming an appointment. And so.
I was just warning
pointing,
you because we were hearing. That's
I know,
all.
I know
that's
and
okay.
You're so right.
I didn't want people to hear what you were.
And
you know,
I do,
HIPAA and all.
I do apologize. New York versus Bloomberg.
We know more about Alan's medical records than we do about Bernie's.
Food morning panel, it says. Food morning panel.
Food morning panel.
Well, you know. One underreported statistic from Bloomberg's tenure as mayor, taxpayers paid $1 billion in settlements for stop and frisk gone wrong. Thank you. And Tim, who is painting a house in Millbrook.
Hello, Tim. Good luck.
It's kind of a wet day.
Wet
to
day,
paint.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wet day to
maybe,
paint.
Maybe it's the inside.
Hopefully inside. Yeah.
Well, in our house, somebody is taking down a huge tree,
and everybody knew
that that tree was going to kill somebody. And by the way, we've had one major such event as a wonderful woman getting killed by a falling branch in Great Barrington. So in the area. So she's doing the right thing, paying a fortune to have it taken down. And sure enough, somebody comes on our listserv and says, too much noise. So that's the way it is.
Can't
that's
win.
Life.
That is life.
Okay. Debate comment. I am 9 debates in and have not heard the word deficit yet. Is anyone else as upset as I am? Gregory.
Boy, Gregory, that's a really good point.
In fairness, I think Bernie has mentioned it, but go ahead.
But I do think the deficit is going to be a huge issue for the next administration. I also foresee if it is a Democratic president, the deficit will become the number one issue for the Republicans in both the Senate and the House, which apparently right now have forgotten
the
fact.
Right.
I think Bloomberg did mention it last night. He talked about the debt. He talked about it. Yeah.
Well, I think when you say the word deficit, people don't quite understand that they have to pay for that deficit. In other words, you got to pay interest on the deficit, and that's coming right out of health care and everything else you could possibly be doing. But people don't make that connection, I don't think.
Well, Trump wants to cut Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid in order to pay for the deficit so that all those rich people have the tax cut. I'm very excited about that.
And Russ says, without a paddle, the latest debate demonstrates how vacuous the Democratic label has become. Even Biden got lost in the weeds every time he spoke. If Pelosi's unable to corral these cats, that's great, corral these cats, it won't be long before we see two new parties, the formerly Republican Nativist Party and the We're Not Them Caucus. Doesn't look good for future legislation, Russ from Menands.
I don't think it's Nancy Pelosi's job to corral the presidential candidates, nor do I think that's even possible.
But yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, I think it's sort of a backhand. Yeah, that she's done such a magnificent job up to now in looking Trump in the eye and doing what.
But the letter's really interesting, though, and you know, it say you have a Sanders Trump election. Basically, you've got two wings. What happens to the middle? I mean, what happens to everybody who's sort of moderate Democrat, moderate Republican, independent? What, you know?
What do you think happens? You think Trump wins, don't you?
I do, because I unfortunately really do. But I also think long term, though, it would be great to see. I think a mid party. I really do. I think it's time to.
And of the people who are up there, who is the best able to do that?
Well,
in your opinion.
You know, I hoped for a long time that Biden was that person. But then again, I was hoping at this point in time he would have locked up, would have had momentum and would have locked it up and would have been looking at a Biden-Trump race, which I think it is winnable for the Democrats.
But if Democrats are walking in on Super Tuesday and they're of your mind, they're going to have to go either for Biden or for Bloomberg, I think. Basically, those are the two viable choices right now.
Yeah, but I also think, Alan, that Amy and Pete both pull votes off of Biden rather than pull votes off of Sanders. So I do think sort of that moderate voice is actually really fragmented versus Sanders and Warren, who appears like she rolled over for him last night.
But I think it's also important, Bob, to consider why we're in a place where we have these two extremes making such headway. I mean, the moderate, whatever you want to sort of identify as a moderate citizen— has just not been as engaged in our democracy at a grassroots level as they should have been for the last 20 years.
That's America.
We live in a democracy where the squeaky wheel, you know, gets the grease, gets the noise. And the progressive far left has been very noisy and very active, and they've gotten organized. And the extreme conservative right has done the same thing. And it has a lot to do with why the middle has been left out.
Okay, and another letter now from Jim. These debates are embarrassing. Watching men and women vying for the presidency, waving their hands, seemingly yelling, "Me, I'm next," looks more like an elementary school classroom than a vetting of the next world leader. And get rid of the live audience, from Jim.
Now, there's an idea. Yeah. There's an idea.
It's not a bad idea.
No laugh track. Yeah. That sounds good.
The reason I can't do that, I won't do it, is it's not good for business.
It's not good for business. It's also not good for. I mean, there are a lot of people in there that probably should be in there, but it's. Meaning.
We got you.
You know, some of the crowd supporters and such.
And Neil says, virus profiteering. Looking online last night, the panic has begun. Masks are not available, just not available anywhere. On Amazon, people are charging 20 times what they are worth. One guy wanted $69 for 10 and $200 for local shipping. Neil from Blooming Grove. Well, I tell you, the rush hasn't happened on the product I'm looking at, which is tuna fish.
It will now.
Does it help against coronavirus?
Well, because they're telling you got to prepare your home for when you can't leave.
The bunker. We're packing the bunker.
Tuna fish is what you're going to stock up on?
There are two things I'm stocking up on.
Toilet paper and tuna fish.
I want cheese doodles.
But you know, everybody should already have at least 3 days' supply of food and water in their house. I mean,
Do you have that? What do you have in your house?
I absolutely do. My kids call my house the zombie bunker. I mean,
you do too. Oh, come on. Everyone does.
No, every day I have to go to the store.
because I don't have enough for dinner that night.
And you've got so much stuff in your cabinets that you probably don't even know that if you had to rely on, you could.
So pull out the canned wax beans.
Absolutely.
When you're starving.
Absolutely.
With the coronavirus.
Because you know something, if you're hungry, wax beans taste really good. If you're not hungry, they don't.
It all tastes good. That's right.
I draw the line at lima beans. Right.
Fill up the bathtub.
You'd be surprised how long you can live on oatmeal. Yeah.
Right. Oatmeal's good.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. And Sean says, Sanders Warren ticket. You have to admit, a Warren Pence debate would be a sight to behold, Sean.
Sure would.
I agree with that letter. Yeah. That would be fun.
I was saying during the break that it's interesting that Bernie is holding a big rally in Springfield Friday night and then announced right before the debate, as far as I could tell, that he was having a big rally in Boston on Saturday.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought that would anger Warren, and I thought that might lead her to really come after him, and it didn't happen.
Unless she sees herself as a VP candidate.
Yes. Yeah. And I wonder how worried she is about losing her home state. I mean, because that is the one thing that gets a lot of people out of the race. They do not want to lose
her. Well, the Boston Globe this morning endorsed her. Surprise.
That doesn't mean a thing.
Surprise.
That doesn't mean a thing.
Okay.
But back to the letter 1 second. I just have this vision of the tortoise being Pence and the hare being Warren and her just sort of running circles around him. It would be a really funny debate now that I really think about it. I'd love to see that.
EJ,
I'm sorry. I can't think of anything except your pantry. I want to see your pantry now.
Okay. I'll take a picture of my pantry.
Okay, good.
EJ says, Elizabeth Warren, I see Warren's debate of Sanders in the debates as evidence that she would like to be considered as a running mate if Sanders wins the nomination. We just said that. Lisa says, good morning, panel. I'm still with Biden. Representative Claiborne endorsed him. Trump is afraid of him. It was great, and he was great in last night's debate. I cannot stand Bernie. Coronavirus may doom Trump as stock market tanks, and some Republicans are going against him because of it. And Jonathan writes, Bernie's programs. Of course we can afford Bernie's programs. Medicare for all is cheaper than what we're doing now. If we can afford a $1 trillion deficit to give tax breaks to the wealthy, we can afford to give child care to young families. Sick of hearing this Republican Party false economics talking point. Jonathan from Valley Falls. And Leslie, Mayor Pete's non-answer to Syria question. Mayor Pete's non-answer to the Syria question was a shining example of what a private equity mouthpiece does. Deflect and obfuscate. He is polished and poised, but seems to be more a resume builder than a strong leader. He's the modern version of Robert Redford in The Candidate. Now, there was a great film, and if anybody hasn't seen it, you should make sure you go and rent it or whatever they're doing these days and pull it down because it's great.
He does seem to have a knack for the smooth line, but then afterwards there's just nothing memorable there.
Yeah, it's thin.
Yeah.
It does. I agree with you.
Or it's like the where's the beef thing from years ago.
What is the last Claire line Pellman. Out of... does anybody remember the last line?
Out of the candidate?
Out of the candidate?
Yeah, I think I do.
The last line?
The last thing is, what do you mean we? So he's now won by selling out every single principle that he has, right? So he turns around to his campaign managers, told him what to say, and he says, what do we do now? And the guy says, what do you mean we?
That's pretty good. Exactly right. Yeah.
You know, Al, one thing about that last letter, though, and we are not paying attention to the situation in Syria and back to the coronavirus is real quickly, if you think what's happening in Iran and you start to think about the conditions in the camps and around the Middle East, particularly in Syria and Jordan and places like that, there's the nexus here for this to be a really, really serious, condition that we have not seen in our lifetime.
Well, Iran doesn't have the camps. You're talking further.
I do not. Iran does have the issue of coronavirus and the camps that are a result of the war in Syria is what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
but there's right. And there's going to be that's where you start to see real potential for spread.
And Sonia says, Sanders has indicated that his running mate will be a person of, quote, different gender and a different generation. It must be someone that can be trusted to lead this movement into the future. And Elizabeth Warren proved in 2016 that she lacks the political courage to stand up to the establishment. Likely it would be Senator Nina Turner.
Nina Turner is his campaign manager, right?
That's right. One of many.
Yeah.
She plays a lead role in the campaign.
I mean, there may be a more practical element to this that we're kind of ignoring, and that's that nobody may have the delegates they need to actually get the nomination.
Well,
and
that's what I think Bloomberg is counting on.
Well, and if Warren has some that she can throw on to Bernie's pile, then that may be the way that he gets over the hump, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, in some ways, it makes sense not to choose one of the people that voters have kind of not been enthusiastic about, at least in the three early states.
Sure.
But in some ways, you might have to. You might need those delegates.
I keep coming back to JFK holding his nose and picking, Johnson.
Yeah.
And saying, okay, it's the only way I can win. I'm doing it.
There's been a lot of Stacey Abrams talk with. With Sanders, and I don't know how realistic that is, but
she has said she's interested.
And there's a congresswoman from California whose name I cannot remember right now.
Congresswoman.
I'll look it up.
Okay, so your guest says he would have a very difficult time. That's you, Bob.
Yep.
Voting for Bloomberg versus Trump.
That's me.
In effect, is no.
No, that's
me.
He's saying that was Christopher Churchill.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I am so sorry.
Yeah. By the way, I got some of Bob's mail last week about comments he made. We should do a better job of identifying ourselves before we speak. Yeah.
I get all Libby's.
Yeah. No, but we all should Libby's do that comments. More often. We should probably say, "What did you say, Bob? What did you say, Chris?" So that people understand exactly who's doing the talking. It's not a bad idea. I'm Alan. very difficult time. 3 question marks. Your guest said he would have a very difficult time voting for Bloomberg versus Trump. That, in effect, is a vote for Trump. Isn't Trump a billionaire? We don't know.
We have no idea.
Isn't getting rid of him at any cost the only way to save this democracy? How could your guest say something like that?
I just would have a very difficult time voting for Bloomberg. He just, everything that I have kind of thought was important in my life, he just kind of stands for the opposite thing. And I think there is a real danger of a Bloomberg candidacy, which is the a lot of younger voters, a lot of voters of color, a lot of poorer voters would have a real tough time showing up for that guy. And, you can talk about moderates and how you wish there were more moderates, but you also need enthusiasm, and it can't be paid enthusiasm. It has to be real, genuine enthusiasm. And if I were the Democrats, that would be my main concern about not just Bloomberg, because there are other candidates who fall into that category as well.
Trump is so terrible. He is so awful and terrible and bad, B-A-D, in every way. How in the world could you not make the distinction, not say, okay, yes, but the greater good is getting rid of Trump?
Well, I mean, that would be something I would have to wrestle with. But I remind you that we've spent a lot of time in this program talking about how Trump hasn't released his taxes, how he's a potential authoritarian, how he's a racist, how he's a sexist. And I think Bloomberg. We've talked Trump.
Oh, okay.
We're not talking the same level.
You can't say, God, isn't it awful that Trump hasn't released his taxes? I'd love to know what was in there. And then give Bloomberg a pass very same thing.
No, right.
All the sexist comments that Trump has made, and Bloomberg has made them too.
He's done more than make comments. Let's make that clear.
I mean, Bloomberg is a guy who took the NYPD and had them spying on Muslims. I mean, what would that guy do with the FBI? What would that guy do with the national security
state? About the same thing Trump is doing.
Well, then that's not a very good choice. I mean,
no, it is a terrible choice. Yeah. But Alan is saying your choice would be a vote for Trump, and that's indefensible.
My choice would be a choice for Lincoln Chafee,
which is a vote for.
Now you're going to get some money.
You're saying Chafee doesn't have a chance?
I think about as good a chance as Jill Stein.
Justin says, Corona. Hi, panel. Thanks for a great show and a great panel. It is a very good panel. My very conservative family member sent me an article from The Post, which implied that China inadvertently or purposely released this virus and others from a lab in Wuhan. I felt such an article was so irresponsible and dangerous without actual proof. I can already sense the defense from the administration that this is biological warfare to take down Trump's presidency. One could make the argument, if you really are into the world of fantasy land, that somebody else put this in China, another force. So, that's all baloney.
Scientists have already said that the structure of the virus is such that they can rule out that it came from a lab.
Yeah, but scientists have said that global warming is a real thing too, and you know.
Oh, that's true. They like hoaxes.
We are living already in a crisis dealing with disinformation coming from everywhere, including foreign countries, but even from our own country, even from our own president. And it's another thing about this situation that just really terrifies me, and that it's so easy to manipulate the truth, either directly or indirectly. And this administration has really taken advantage of that. So.
Yeah.
Do we really know what's going on?
Anyway, Lawrence said Bloomberg et al. In a country with historic levels of economic inequality, where the extremely rich control the vast majority of the nation's wealth, perhaps the most representative leaders really are amoral billionaires. Maybe Trump, Bloomberg, Bezos are the presidents we deserve. Just a thought from Lawrence.
Could very well be true.
It's interesting.
Panel, says Anthony, it's got to be Biden. Panel, due to the love people have to be entertained, Biden's our man. Bernie would be better, but he can never beat Trump. But in the end, it's all for naught. As long as McConnell leads the Senate, enough said. Carry a handkerchief and use it. Anthony.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue and have the our last go-round here with the panel. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Last call here on the roundtable panel. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We will continue with our letters, and then we'll continue our in-depth discussion on the issues of the day.
Okay.
Or whatever it is we do.
Deborah says, have we learned nothing? Pandemic planning for H1N1 went to all levels of our society. We already know what to do. Dust off the plans, update them, and engage. We don't need to wait for Trump. We need to get moving and stop the fear.
Yep.
Easily said, you know.
Yeah, but it's a really good point. And again, some of the things that we can do as a society are very basic. We just need to focus people.
Well, it's also where you begin to really appreciate what local government can do, what local and state government can do, which gets all too often overlooked. And it probably will be local and state government that saves us from this.
Anyway, Deborah says COVID and broken and voting. A prohibition on public gathering could affect voting and the election. That's right.
Yep.
No question. Mm. How that breaks, we don't know. Tricia says, how do we choose a candidate? The panel just listed all the flaws, mistakes, and missteps of the top candidates, Sanders, Warren, Biden, in the debate, revealing their not insubstantial shortcomings, then brushed past Klobuchar and Buttigieg's good points and calm reasoning, reasonable demeanor. It is so frustrating to see a smart, well-prepared candidate like Klobuchar get overlooked by the people because she's not promising them unicorns.
Klobuchar would have been, if you're looking for someone who's a Sanders alternative, and Klobuchar makes a lot of sense to me. Cory Booker made a lot of sense to me. There are a lot of people in this race. I mean, they all have flaws. They all have red flags, Klobuchar included.
Yeah.
Mayor Pete included, for sure. You know, and I don't
but
know.
How
you're not going to find the perfect person, no. I guess.
But how intuitive do we have to be? So, for example.
I think we make this too complicated, to be honest with you.
Your intuition about. Any of these candidates, and you look at them and you say, oh, come on, I don't like you. Doesn't that happen to you?
Yes.
It does.
Keep going, Chris.
Well, I just think we're making this too complicated. The person who's the nominee should be the person that Democrats like most, right? And if you look at favorability polls, if you look at national polling, it's Sanders. And then Biden. Those are the two people. Their favorabilities are way, way, way ahead of everybody else.
Sure.
So, I mean, part of that is name recognition. And when you go state by state, that fades a little bit. But those are also, in national polls, the two people who do the best against Trump.
Anyway, Jamie, pandemic problems. It's already out. When it shows up in Italy, it means it's out. As for Africa Row, they may be the only ones who survive. The virus does not do well in warm weather and needs cold weather to spread. It's most likely will quiet down for the summer and then explode worldwide in the fall. We can be sure this administration will do nothing to prepare.
Interesting.
Ashley says, should we risk such disruption for a 2% case fatality rate? Now, there's an interesting question. If you're one of the 2%, it might well affect you. It's too long a letter, but I can say this. It is sad to say, but for most people, COVID-19 seems to manifest as a cold or flu. Most infected people die from pneumonia-related complications among individuals with pre-existing conditions. Okay, and then it goes on. You get the idea. The title is, should we risk such a disruption for 2% case fatality rate? Frank says, Trump doesn't care about coronavirus. The only thing Trump cares about concerning the coronavirus is not that many Americans might die. He's worried that the virus will damage the stock market, and he sees that it may ruin his chances to win re-election. It's all about him, and to hell with everybody else. What a schmuck. Thanks. Thanks.
I couldn't agree more. I think that is the perfect letter of the day.
I have another question one I asked during the break, but now I'll ask this one on the air that I've been thinking about. You remember when we were we've been talking a lot about at this time 4 years ago of where we were because we were comparing the Republican debates to the Democratic debates and what they're going through now. But one of the things because Trump was out there and was saying all of these inflammatory things, and he was bringing in huge crowds. Every time he would go to speak, they would run his rallies from start to finish on cable news.
Right,
why aren't we seeing that for Bernie? Why aren't we seeing that if he is the front runner and he is the person? Why, and especially around these contests, why are we not seeing that? Why are we not seeing it for Biden? Why are we not seeing it for even again? If you just look at the front runner status, yes.
Because Joe, they finally got enough courage to say we're not going to do the full thing for Trump. So how now do you start doing full things for the Democratic candidates? Even though
they shouldn't do it. They shouldn't do it for Trump. They shouldn't have done it for Trump.
And no.
But the other thing too is that Bernie, he does give a pretty standard stump speech every time out. It would be pretty repetitive, whereas Trump was just making news, quote unquote.
Okay, so
every time he gave.
Good yeah, point. But it's like the audience.
Yeah, but the audience, I mean,
you're bringing, he's there, and that's getting, bringing in an audience. But I would argue that they're doing the same thing now when he spoke in the White House right after impeachment. That was a victory rally.
Well, no, but he's the president.
He's president.
And it's newsworthy. I mean, it's newsworthy, and it draws an audience. Just showing another politician that's been in office for 30 years giving the same speech he's been giving for 30 years is not particularly newsworthy. A guy who owns many giant skyscrapers in New York City and who burned down a casino and who bankrupted a bunch of other businesses is running for president. That's a big deal.
I mean, Trump.
Well, he didn't burn it down. He just bankrupted it.
Yeah. I meant that metaphorically.
He played the free media game brilliantly. You know, he got a lot of billions of dollars worth of free air.
And that's ultimately what I was asking about. You know, where's the free media now?
I mean, if one of the Democratic frontrunners was saying just tremendously outrageous things every time he was speaking, they might cut to him live. But I'm not sure that that's what we really need or want.
And you're talking about earned media too, and they're not earning it. I mean, they're not earning it. I mean, Trump earned the media that he got. He went after it, and I can't stand the guy, but you can't say he's not a master of getting the media's attention.
Yes.
Democrats haven't been able to do that. They're just not earning it.
No. All I can say is, as the guy who probably interviewed Bernie 100 times on the Congressional Corner over the years, it doesn't change. You could go in there and you could start talking to him and turn off the microphone, and you're going to hear the same thing you're hearing now in the sound bites.
Well, I do think there is something to be said for his massive crowds, though. I do think that those matter. Yeah. I mean, that level of enthusiasm, you do need something like that to carry you through.
Yep.
Oh, gosh. And again, it's a Trump comparison. He has massive crowds, too. I hope that one effect of coronavirus is political rallies are shut down.
Say again?
That is interesting. I thought about that.
Political rallies are huge congregations of people.
You
could spread the virus.
You shouldn't hope for that, because political rallies are very important for driving turnout. And
didn't work for Bernie last time, Chris.
What's that?
He had huge crowds and the people didn't vote for him. He lost in the primaries.
Well, maybe he did pretty well. And he, very young.
He's still around 4 years later and he's doing well again. I mean,
he's been around for 30 years. That's, you know, that's as we keep saying. He sticks around. He talks a lot.
But will you have to shut down the rallies? Well, the people, what I'm curious about is if people will just stay home and not go to the rallies. That's what I'm wondering about, right. Even if they're not shut down.
Well, if they're afraid, they're not going to come out to vote either because polling places.
How does that impact the election if supporters aren't coming out to rallies? Yeah.
Trump goes, well, we got to call off the election. I'll just stay on.
This is another thing I'm worried about. If we get to a point where this virus takes control and it gives him an excuse to cancel the election.
Oh, you know, man. I would have thought that was really far-fetched just a short time ago, but now I have to really think about it.
You know, and also there are certain candidates that people will walk through hot coals to vote for, and other candidates people are more tepid about.
Trump and Sanders.
Right. So, I mean.
So who's got more? That's the question.
On Super Tuesday, maybe this helps Sanders. Who knows?
Susan says, Corona, are there certain individuals who have a higher risk factor than others in contracting the virus? Yes, we know this. We know that kids don't get it. Young children don't get it. Mm-hmm. And we know the older you are and if you have pre-existing conditions, you're more likely to get it. Right?
Right.
Mr.
Although there is some confusion
Bob's
about
brow is for,
Mr. Homeland Security.
I don't know. I actually need to do more research on that, and it's really interesting. We have a really terrific dean of the School of Public Health at University of Albany, and he and I were having a back and forth about the issue of mutation and transmission and how this thing is jumping. And I'm not sure where it is right now, Alan. The other point,
that was the early thing we were reading in every news.
Right, and back to real quickly. I mean, part of the issue that you can't sleep on is the number of people who are sick. Not necessarily the lethality of it, but when you get sick with this, you get sick. I mean, this isn't something you bounce back right away. It's not, you know, I was thrown up last night and I'm better today. It takes a lot of time to get over this, and you can't lose sight of that.
And the problem is, we all get sick at some point.
Yeah,
and it hasn't ever been the coronavirus. So, you know, every time there's going to be massive paranoia in this country when this thing hits.
Well, and you know, Alan, God bless the teachers who are in the classroom, you know, what you think of the kids.
Because
everybody knows that once a bug gets into the school system, how tough it is to continue to educate and, you know, they're little Petri dishes.
We have four more minutes.
Yeah.
Like that? Okay.
Well, we're talking about the symptoms, which you want to check on. I think there's great confusion on how lethal this thing is. I know it's spreading easily, but again, the Homeland Security guy in Congress yesterday did not know. My son and I had a big fight because I'm saying, no, the flu is more fatal. And he's saying, no, it's not. I don't know anymore. I looked online and I find the numbers extremely confusing and contradictory.
Well, the coronavirus, as I understand it, has a respiratory component to it that the average flu doesn't have, meaning that you could very well need a ventilator to be able to recover from it if you get a severe case of it. Mm-hmm. Whereas with a typical flu that we've all had, you know, respiratory issues may not come into play as often.
But this is exactly where we need the medical community and the federal government to take a leadership role in starting to define this. The CDC needs to come out with a definitive frequently asked questions and guidance. This is why we have these federal agencies. They need to step up now in order to be able to give us these answers.
It's hard to step up when you have acting directors and you're constantly under the threat of being fired and your president just shuts you down and says you're wrong. It's very difficult to do that.
Yeah, okay. We got more letters, Sharon, how to prepare without panic. With all this talk about the possibility of the pandemic coming to our country, what is your advice about being reasonable and prepared without panicking? Well, I don't know. How about tuna fish? Lael says, thank you.
Well, but Alan, one second. Quickly, wash your hands. If you're not feeling well, don't sneeze on other people. You know, practice good hygiene. If you're going to cough into your elbow, not into somebody's face.
Well, you can sneeze on them.
You know, and there are things that you can do to really reduce the opportunity.
Those things sound like basic manners.
They are absolutely basic manners.
Don't sneeze on people.
Lael, for God's sakes, flush when you're done. Go ahead.
Lael, who writes us, says, thank you for talking about Warren and acknowledging she could be a contender. I finally agree with whoever said you can get a bit horse racy, and then goes on. It's still a little too long. And Roger says coronavirus.
That was Chris. Thank you.
And Roger says, coronavirus. Team coronavirus, have the Dems figured out a way to wreck the economy before the election and blame the president? Are you kidding?
Yeah, Roger, we unleashed the coronavirus. Impeachment didn't work, so we just let loose with the virus.
Right. Adam
Schiff's
fault.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Roger Wright says it. But, you know, I was watching Law and Order the other night, and Adam Schiff, of course, was the DA, the old DA on Law and Order. Right?
Was?
Yeah, he was.
The one.
Yeah, he was.
That was the character.
The character.
Oh, okay.
The character name.
I thought it was like, who is the guy, the presidential candidate who used to be on Law and Order?
Fred Thompson.
Yeah, I thought you meant like the ice tea. Yeah.
He died. He was good. He was good. Melissa, big ticket attendees. The talking point that folks paid $1,700 a ticket to get in is a distorted piece of propaganda that Bernie and his surrogates have pushed. The South Carolina Democratic Party at large did not sell tickets. The Charleston chapter sold their cut of the tickets in exchange for sponsorship. Most of the tickets were given away to organized supporters of the candidates. We have to be better about pushing disinformation and reinforcing it. We have learned nothing since 2016. Rick says, coronavirus is a time for the country to pull together. Instead, panel members salivating over another opportunity to divide is lunacy. What?
Because we're saying it could hurt Trump.
All right. And for God's sakes,
we didn't say we hope he gets it.
Like, Catherine says,
we didn't say sneeze on the president. We could have done much worse.
On the air, we didn't
Catherine
say
says, bro.
30 seconds, go ahead.
I'm getting a little tired of the dismissive label, Bernie bro. Women under 45 make up more than the base of support than men. Don't believe me? Look at the polling. I'm not a bro, Catherine from all.
Another talking point.
Yeah, and Anita says, virus, in addition to dismantling our federal protections, Trump is echoing Xi in stating that the virus is not a risk here. Xi is the reason the virus has become a global emergency, and Trump operates the same way. His ignorance and arrogance is breathtaking, and more than the virus, we should fear Trump, the malignant tumor. And that's from Anita in Kingston.
We are out of time. My thanks to everybody. We will be back right after this.